Good morning. Welcome to Genesis. We're glad you're hanging out with us. I hope you're getting close to being ready for Christmas. Hope that you plan on coming to Christmas Eve service with us. We're going to have a great time on Thursday evening, right? Yeah, I got that right. Thursday evening. Boy, I don't even know when Christmas is. Thursday evening, we're doing our Christmas Eve service. 5 o'clock, we'll be in here. We will have childcare for younger, like children and younger preschoolers. If you want to come, bring them. But the rest is going to be a family service. It's going to be really creative. A lot of video clips. We're kind of using the Grinch theme. So it'll be a great time. And as we talk about, sing a lot of carols and talk about Christmas. I love Christmas Eve services just because what they do for me is they make sure I don't jump into the holiday and take off without stopping and thinking, why are we doing this? And so we hope you will bring your family, friends, all that kind of stuff Thursday night. You know, it's Christmas. I hope you're getting close to getting your shopping done, doing all this stuff. You know, I don't know about you, but we kind of come, if you've been hanging out with us at Genesis, we've been doing this Advent conspiracy thing, talking about maybe rethinking how we do the whole holidays and being used by God to maybe participate in something that's bigger and maybe spending less and giving more and all. And so anytime I go shopping, I'm kind of like, oh, I'm a little uncomfortable with this. But I know some of you are still trying to come up with that, like that last minute Christmas gift. And you know, if you're thinking about me on your list, I thought I'd share some things this morning with you, things that I don't really want. So these are just a few things that if you're still looking and still thinking, you know, I need to get Mike a last minute Christmas gift, I thought I'd show you some things this morning that I really, you know, I probably would re-gift if you did that. So we got some pictures up here, and here's the first thing. If you decide you're going to, while I enjoy duck hunting, I don't need a duck hat. I know some people that would look good on, but I don't know, you know. All right, the next thing is, this is word search toilet paper. Now, I do enjoy the reading room and all, but I don't think I could get into that. All right, the next one. You got one of these? Yes! That is amazing. This one needs no explanation. By the way, I also saw similar versions with Santa Claus and elves, which is really disturbing. All right, next one. Now, this one is hard to see, but this is, are you ready for this? Twinkie-flavored lip gloss. I mean, I know we like have this sweet tooth thing. Maybe if you had a police officer friend, this would work. Oh, where's Chris? Is Chris Pacheco in here? Perfect last minute gift for him, all right? There you go. All right. This one is for Christy. These are Freudian slippers. I don't need these, really. Freudian slippers. All right, next one. Hey, we lost it. There it is. That right there would be a Jesus bobblehead. I'm not sure whether to laugh or cry at the Jesus bobblehead, you know, the idea of Jesus going down the street doing this, you know, but if you're thinking of me, I don't need a Jesus bobblehead. All right, next one. You get it? A Noel Christmas button. I don't need one of those, okay? All right, next one. Now, the problem with that is not only is that putrid, that really doesn't work on a fat guy. So, you know, if you're out shopping and you see this, just say no, okay? Just say no, L, ha ha. All right. That right there would be an iPod dock toilet paper roll combo, speakers on the side. Now, here's what's funny. I showed this to my family and my son went, I would like that. Wow. All right, here's the last thing I don't need for Christmas. Don't even bother. I'm not interested, all right? Rams tickets. Well, we're glad you're here. We've been talking about, you know, how Christmas can shape us. And the beauty of Christmas is that if you unwrap everything and you get down to the heart of it, there's a story of the fact that God entered into our story. that he has engaged us with this great narrative that is the coming of Jesus, that literally we live broken, twisted, hurting lives because of our own sinfulness, because sin is part of the creative order. There's a lot of hurt and suffering. And God hasn't kept a distance and just looked at that and said, all right, fix it yourselves. God came himself in the person of Jesus, stepped into our story. But then we kind of sit here at Christmas with a challenge of, well, we read the story and know about Jesus and maybe even go look at manger scenes like we have over here and just kind of keep the story at arm's length, just something that is the backdrop of Christmas. Or is there a way that we truly can enter the story, that we can become part of what the story of Christmas is all about, and so that it will shape us, change us, make us different in some way, shape, or form? And this Advent conspiracy idea, I just thought it was really cool. It's actually gotten a lot of play here in St. Louis because Albert Pujols kind of got involved on it. Have you guys heard either on the radio or TV, a story about Advent conspiracy and how Pujols has kind of talked about this at all? How many of y'all have heard this? I was driving to listen to Camel X and they were talking about it and just having this conversation about Advent conspiracy. I just thought it was kind of cool. But the kind of bottom line idea of Advent conspiracy is that if we truly enter the story and we really get what Jesus is about and understand the purpose of the incarnation, that it will shape the way we spend and the way we give and those sorts of things. And it starts with worship. A couple weeks ago, we talked about the fact that at the heart of this is our understanding that we are looking to Jesus as God and trusting him in our worship. We literally open our lives like an open canvas to God and say, listen, make of me what you wish. My life is yours. And then last week we talked about spending less, and not just because, well, you know, we max out our credit cards and because we go, you know, to the mailbox in the middle of the month of January, open the mailbox and pull out all the, Christmas, after Christmas mail. And it's very hard to go, thank you, Jesus, that you were born in January when I'm opening the mailbox. But that even there's a bigger issue of the fact that God challenges us to be a little bit counter the culture and not to be consumed by all the things that, this drive in our world for more and more and more, and that we can answer all of life's questions and with stuff, and that the best way to show that we love somebody is always stuff, and that the answer really is that God didn't send us stuff, he came himself, that it's a relational response, not a can I go spend more money to prove my love response. Well, this morning we're talking a little bit about giving more, that the challenge then is that we ought to see Christmas as a time that kind of springboards us to maybe finding ways to give more and allow God to shape us so that more of our resources go towards things that are kingdom of God, things that really deeply matter. During Christmas, we specifically have an offering that is going to three different locations. When we gather it, we'll divide it out. It will go to help build wells with an organization called Living Water. We're going to help support missionaries, and we're also going to help support an orphanage in Haiti. And so for us, that's the way we're going to do that. And I'll talk about more of that in a little bit. But at the heart of this, we're really talking about the idea that we need to let the gospel shape our lives. Let's enter this story together. And so this morning, as I talk to you about that, we're going to look at part of the Christmas story, probably a portion that a lot of us are familiar with, the story of the three wise men. Actually, the Bible doesn't tell us how many there are. There's three gifts, but throughout history, it's been three kings or three wise men. I saw a shirt this week that I thought was kind of funny. It was a woman's shaped shirt, just so you know, and it said three wise men. Yeah, right. But these people who came to the young Jesus bringing gifts, and how their story just reminds us of this fact. So if you have a Bible, we're going to be looking in Matthew chapter 2. If you don't have a Bible, at the end of your rows, we have Bibles for you. We'd love for you to have one of those and read along with us. If you're at the end, just pass those Bibles down and just make sure everybody has one. In that Bible this morning, we'll be on page 687. And we're going to read the story about the Magi, the wise men, these guys who came to encounter, to see Jesus from the East, from a distance. These guys were not Jewish in descent. They were probably Persian. And they came because they encountered a star that drew them And they came to Jesus. So chapter 2, verse 1, page 687 in that Bible. It says, now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men came from the east to Jerusalem, saying, where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. Now, basically, like I said, these were men who were Persians. They were from, you know, what we would know as Iraq, ancient Babylon, that kind of region of the world. And they were spiritual sages, more than likely, people who kind of dealt in some of the occultish sort of things, or, you know, they would look to the stars and hope they would find truth in the stars, and, you know, all the kind of what we would see in what some people would call New Age kind of practices. But they found this star, they saw the star, and part of ancient understanding of things is that a new star represented the birth of a new king. And so they decided they were going to go find this king, and they followed the star. And there's all kinds of theories about what the star was, how it got there, and all that kind of stuff. But at the heart of this, we need to realize that what is happening here is that the glory of God is drawing people to Jesus. That's the heart of this. Doesn't matter if it was a comet, a meteor, a star, if it was Saturn. The bottom line is that God put something there, and in his glory drew these men to find Jesus. And as they were traveling, verse 3 says, when Herod the king heard of this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where Christ was to be born. And they told him, in Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, and you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Now, Herod, I won't go into a lot of detail, but Herod is kind of the ruler. He's the king over the region. He rules for Rome. He's a Middle Eastern guy. He's not a Jew, but they called him the king of the Jews. He ruled over the Middle East for Rome. And when he heard the news that the Christ, the Messiah, might be born, it freaked him out. Now, this guy was a nut job. He was known for whacking all sorts of people. He had killed wives. He had killed children. He had killed close friends because he would get paranoid that they would take his throne. And when he hears that this promised Messiah that the Jews have been looking for might be born, it freaks them out, and it says all Jerusalem with him. So they go to some of the rulers or some of the religious leaders, and they say, where is this supposed to happen? And these guys look to an Old Testament text out of the book of Micah that was written 700 years before the birth of Jesus, and they said, the prophet said the Messiah, the Christ, would be born in Bethlehem. Bethlehem, we talked about this last week, is just a little small shepherding village about 6 miles out of Jerusalem. And so they begin to head that way. In verse 7, then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, go search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring him to me that I too may come and worship him. Now, he did not intend this. And as you read the story on, we won't cover this morning, we'll talk a little bit about it. Ultimately, Herod didn't want to worship him. He wanted to kill him. After listening to the king, they went on their way. And behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshiped him. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. We come to Christmas, and the challenge to give more is just kind of there. I mean, it's interesting how the story of Jesus, the story of Christmas, speaks into almost all of our lives that we ought to give. We give presents. But, you know, we all are, you know, as you go to Walmart or other places where, you know, the guy's there with the kettle and ringing the bell, something happens in us that goes, you know, I need to drop a few bucks in. I need to participate. This stuff matters. I do need to care for people. I need to give away. And we struggle with how to do that. I think just the very fact that it's Christmas challenges us that way. But the question becomes not how can we just give a few bucks away, but how, if we were really to enter the story, if we were to understand Jesus, if we were to see Jesus as the Messiah, the Christ, the one who God had promised, and that story entered into us and we entered into it, how would it shape that giving? How would it affect our relationships? How would it change the way we dealt with not just our money, but all of life? And in this story, there's just some great images of how This needs to happen for us this morning. And that's kind of the challenge. And what's going to happen in the sermon or the talk today is that I'm going to kind of lay out some ideas from the text for us to consider. And then we're going to sing a song and see a video and do some things. And then we're going to come back out later with some people to help me out. We're going to throw out just some really practical ideas of how to implement the thoughts into our life, even this week and beyond, all right? So how does this story, the story of the wise men, the magi, challenge us to consider the gospel? And the first thing is we need to see there's an order of events that happens here that I want us to look at and consider. And the order is first of all, what takes place here is that the glory of God draws them to Jesus. There is this pull from the star to guys who are spiritual seekers. They want truth. They want to find the ultimate king. They want to find the one who will really matter, who will really change them, who will make life work, that life will make sense. And they are seeking for that. That's a good thing. But what they do is the glory of God, the star, draws them to Bethlehem and leads them to the very house where Jesus is. There is a very real sense that the first thing that happens is that God draws them by his glory to Jesus as the answer, the one that they are seeking. And I want to say that as we even, you know, what happens in the holidays is we kind of see Jesus in the backdrop. We see the story of Jesus. We may even read it at Christmas, but what we need in our lives more than anything is the God of the universe to show his glory to us and draw us to Jesus himself. That is literally the first step where we go from Christmas just being a holiday that's crazy, that's busy, that is maxed out, that, yeah, I kind of think about the reason for the season, but at the same time, I just feel like my life is crazy and I just can't make sense of things and it just go, 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 go. That we need God to call us to what really matters, and what really matters is that he leads us to Jesus and faith in him. And that's the first thing. Jesus, later in his life, out of the book of John, says, "No one can come to the Father unless the Father in heaven draws him to me." And here's the deal: what we really need, and what I would encourage all of us to be praying for, but especially if you're like the wise men, that you're just kind of in the seeking mode. You're just like, you know, I'm checking this thing out. I'm not quite there yet. I'm not really sure what to believe about Jesus or about God, but I know that there is something that I need. Make your prayer this holiday season, God, draw me to Jesus. Help me understand him. Help me see him. Help it make sense. And that's what happens with these wise men. They're seeking. They go find out where the Christ was going to be born, but that's not where it stopped, that God literally drew them with his glory to Jesus. And the response, just the natural response, look at this. In verse chapter 2, verse 10, when they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. This is a byproduct. This is just a natural outgrowth of the fact that God had led them to Jesus. They come to realize that they are finding God's solution to their struggle, and a very natural heart response is that they were filled with joy. And here's the difference, okay? What happens a lot of times when people want you to give money, I mean, it would be really cool if we had like a $15,000 Advent conspiracy offering. I could go around to all the pastors in St. Louis going, man, our church here, we have like 100, we raised all this money. Look at us. It would be really cool. And the way I could get to do that is to stand in front of you and go, don't you all know how much Jesus has done for you? It's the least you could do to give. But see, what I'm doing is I'm motivating you not by joy, I'm motivating you by guilt. I've been in churches over and over and over again where people stood up and go, Jesus died on the cross for you. Don't you realize that? Now open your pocketbooks and give. And we'll respond to that. A lot of you came from all kinds of religious traditions where everything was about motivating you with guilt. If you just knew the gift that God had given. But I want to tell you, that's not really the Bible. The Bible, it is God draws us to Jesus. We have a response where all of a sudden we're overjoyed at the greatness of our God. And all the things that happen in our lives flow from that. That there's joy. That there's joy in Christmas because Christ has come. There is joy in living because God fills my life with good things. There is joy in suffering because I find the goodness of God in the middle of my brokenness. There's joy. See, joy, these magi, they didn't show up and just try to produce joy. Joy was what God placed in their hearts because they had followed where God drew them to Jesus. They have joy. And so the result of that joy is that they go in, and verse number 11, it says, and going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshiped him. The response, they have joy, and the response is they go in, and you got to picture this scene. Here's these guys who probably were spiritual advisors to kings, spiritual advisors to royalty in other countries. And they had come to Bethlehem, and they walk into this house. They'd followed the star. They walk into this house, and the Bible says they fell down and worshiped him. And the original word here in the original language is a word for worship that literally means to fall on your face before someone and blow kisses, okay? Now, you got to understand what's going on here is, in military terms, in that culture, if you were to run into people who were different ranks, you respond in different ways. If you were to walk into somebody who was an equal rank, you would just bow to them. If you were to walk to somebody who was a little bit above you in rank, you would kneel before them. But if you were to walk before somebody who was like the king or the highest general, you literally would bow before them and you would blow kisses up as a way of saying, I am bending my life to you. My life is yours. I will follow you. You are in control of my life. I give my life to you. You are the king. And these guys walk into his house, and there's Mary, you know, this sweet little teenage girl with her young child, this baby who looks just like any other Middle Eastern baby. And their response to this is to fall on their face, to start putting their face to the ground and kissing up to this baby as a sign of worship, of I am bending and bowing my life to this baby. And they worship. And what happens as a result of the worship, look at the next phrase. He says, the text says, they fell down and worshiped him, then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts. As they worshiped, they took their treasures, meaning they literally opened all their wealth to Jesus. And they began to offer him gifts. And we know the gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, that there were these incredible gifts here given to Jesus. And we, you know, even our giving at Christmas, Santa Claus is coming to town and the Christmas tree and all the presents began with these three guys coming to Jesus and literally having a point where they fell and worshiped and offered all of their treasures to this baby. And I just, this is what we need. We go see the kettle and we're compelled to give. And that's a good thing. But what we really need is we all need this place where the glory of God draws us to Jesus. And that our hearts are just melted by his greatness. And we see Jesus as the one we are following. Jesus as the greatness of God. Jesus as the beauty of life. And all of a sudden our hearts are overjoyed because God shows us Jesus clearly. And our response to joy is that we worship, that we bow ourselves to Jesus. And as we bow ourselves to Jesus, we open our lives to him, all of our treasures. And we say, listen, my life is not mine anymore. It's yours. I give myself away. And the result is that there are treasures. And the beauty of this is God inspired both the writer Matthew and even these men to give gifts. There is deep imagery in the gifts that they give. And so if our giving is shaped, it needs to be shaped by the same things that these guys were shaped with. And just a couple things about this, a couple ways that their giving was shaped literally by the gospel, how the gifts of the Magi are a model for us. And first of all, the image, the gifts image the mission of Jesus. See, they gave him gold and frankincense and myrrh, and there are pictures in these gifts as they give them away to Jesus. There are pictures in these gifts of why Jesus came. His whole purpose for showing up for you and for me. And these gifts image some Old Testament pictures of the one that God would send. In the Old Testament, God sent three types of people to lead his people. God sent kings, he sent prophets, he sent priests. The kings ruled for God. The prophets spoke for God and let the people really understand who God was. And the priests were the go-between. They would serve in the temple. They would offer sacrifices. They were the go-between between God and the people. And these magi, these kings, these guys who show up offer gifts, and the gifts are gold. Gold is imagery of royalty, that Jesus is our king. We bow to him as the ruler of life. He is our king. They gave him frankincense. Frankincense is like a something that you would burn. It was an incense, and they burned it in the temple all the time. Priests would burn incense in the temple. And as you walked in the temple, you would smell two dominant odors. You would smell the smell of sacrifices being made, but you would also smell the incense that was being offered up to God. And always, incense is this imagery of prayers being offered up, and in this case, by priests on behalf of the people. And that Jesus is our ruler. We bow to him as king. He is our priest. He literally is the one who goes between, who offers himself and offers intercession. He prays. He is the one who is our go-between between us and God the Father. And then myrrh, it's kind of weird. It's actually an embalming fluid. It's a burial spice. And in this, you have this picture of Jesus coming to be the ultimate sacrifice, that ultimately his mission was to die. And in the coming of Jesus, his life, his death, his burial, and his resurrection, we see the beauty of God and his purpose in our lives. And he becomes the ultimate prophet, the ultimate spokesman, the ultimate one who pictures God for us. And so Jesus, when he's talking to some people, and they say, "Show us the Father." Jesus responds as, "If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. I and the Father are one." He becomes the ultimate image of God's purpose, his mission, his plan for us. And when these guys bring these gifts, okay, they show up gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and they put it at the feet of Jesus, there is in this the fact that these gifts are an image of why Jesus came. So why does that matter to us? Here we are at Christmas. Why does that matter? You know, Advent conspiracy, giving, all that kind of stuff. It matters because ultimately our giving needs to be shaped by the mission of Jesus. There's all kinds of good causes out there, but we need to remember that Jesus is our ultimate, you know, he's the one we're pursuing, and our giving needs to be shaped by the fact that his mission in our lives is transforming. And that it's not just, oh, I throw a few dollars here or there. It's that literally my life is being shaped by why Jesus came, but I want to see that reproduced in others, okay? But not only that, not only is the image of Jesus, the mission of Jesus, they also support the mission of Jesus. Their gifts image this mission, but they support him. Because what we have here in this town, Mary, Joseph, Jesus, are Galilean peasants who are probably very poor, who are away from home for an extended period of time, trying to struggle to make ends meet. And as the story goes on, what we're going to find out here is that Herod is now going to send people to Bethlehem and kill all the babies under 2 years old, which means he is hunting after this child. And we read this and we're like, nobody would ever do this. I'm telling you, if you study this guy, Herod the Great, historically, this totally fits in character. This is who he was. He did this all over the Middle East at the time, whacked all kinds of people, and now he's after this Christ child. And you have Galilean peasants who are going to need to flee because Jesus came not to die as a baby, he came to die on the cross. How are they going to get to Egypt, which is where they go? And the answer is that the gifts of these magi, these men give these gifts, and literally it is the funding of these gifts that provide the resources for God to accomplish through Mary and Joseph and Jesus what he needs to do. Now, what does that mean? It means for us as we consider giving at Christmas, I think what we have here is that God is still on mission. At that point in time, the mission was Jesus dying on the cross. In our time, the mission is caring for the poor. It is, you read the scriptures, deep in the heart of God, caring for the poor. It is seeing the advance of the kingdom of God. It is making a difference in the lives of people, as sending missionaries, as all these sorts of things. And that all of a sudden, as we consider, you know, we enter the story and we consider the gospel, what happens is all of a sudden we have this deep desire because of the joy that's in our lives because of Jesus to join God in what he's doing, not just here, but all over the place. And so when you hear about people who don't have clean water and 80% of the people in a certain town are dying, and when they die, 80% of the people who die because of diseases they get from their drinking water. Our hearts should be just deeply moved. And when we hear that there are like 5,000 people groups around the world who've never had anybody come to them and tell them anything about Jesus. Something ought to go off on the inside of us, go, man, that matters. Because I have joy. I want other people to experience that. I want them to be drawn to Jesus. Now, it's not guilt. Don't be motivated by guilt ever in your giving. And then we look around, we see family, and we see, you know, listen, I know that holidays ought to remind me that I should be caring for, you know, being connected with my kids and my family. I ought to be relational with the people around us, and we feel like that ought to be a part of our lives. We look at our own neighborhood, and we're like, you know, I would love to have relationships with my neighbors. And all of a sudden, we feel all this tension of giving, of family, of all these things that are shaping us or that are challenging us at Christmas, and we feel it, right? And so at Christmas, we forge out a little more time for family. We get out and meet neighbors, and I mean, all that sort of thing that are part of the challenge at Christmas. But what happens in our lives, and this is where the consumerism comes back in. We've been talking about how this idea of this God of consumerism, that we're driven to have more, to give our kids the biggest gifts, and it's not just Christmas, it's year-round, the consumerism. What happens as a result of the fact that in our culture, we kind of have bowed to this God of bigger cars, bigger houses, more stuff, that what happens is that all of our lives are kind of maxed out. Okay, we live at the limits. In other words, we have no margins in our lives anymore. We literally are living our lives in such a way that our spending is not just maxed out, but we have buku money on credit cards. Our time is wall to wall. And so, you know, so you feel like I need to be with my kids more. I need to know my neighbors. I need to do these things that are part of living out the gospel. And we want to, but we don't have margins in our lives to do that. Or we say, you know, I really need to be involved in living God's mission in my neighborhood. How do I do that? But we can't ever find a Saturday or a weeknight just to get out and even to meet people. Margins, they're gone. And here's my challenge for us this morning. That if the gospel really started shaping us as a people, as individuals and even as a church, one of the things that would happen is that we would look to Jesus. Our joy would be so full, but we would allow our lives, our treasures to be open to him. And God would begin to help us to find ways in our lives to reclaim those margins again. The margins in our giving and what we spend, the margins in our time and the way we interact with family. We love and live out the gospel with the people that are in our own home. And even margins so that we could serve and be involved in our community and the lives of other people, right? And that's the challenge. In a few minutes, we're going to come back out here and talk about some really practical ways to do that. But that's the challenge, that if we really see Jesus, we really enter his story, the challenge will be that we really come to the point where God is shaping our lives so that we're different from the culture. We're not driven by the same beat that everybody else is, but that gradually we begin to say, I'm going to reclaim the margins in life so that more of my life and my resources and even my own self can be used. I'm opening my treasures and allow them to be used for the kingdom of God and to support the mission of Jesus, all right? But as part of that, we're doing Advent Conspiracy, and you know we've got our shopping cart over here. We've been using it all month, and in our shopping cart, what we've kind of been doing is every service, we've been talking about a little bit where the Advent Conspiracy money, if you give to the Advent Conspiracy, where that offering will go. We've been opening a present each week, and as we open a present, what happens is that we have a little less in the cart, which is a good image, and a little more for us to interact with. And so we have another present. I'm going to open this one this morning. I like this because I get to be the one who opens presents. And how many of you all are when you open presents, you get rid of the tape and you're like real neat and try to save the paper? Anybody in here like that? I just tear into it and rip into it and, you know, open it. And, you know, wow, somebody, whoever wrapped this one taped it good so I can't even get in the box. I hate when that happens. It makes me mad. Hey, look at here. I got a globe. Just what I wanted. This is kind of a reminder. We live in a big world. It's a big, big world. Lots of people, billions of people around the world. And a lot of those people don't have anybody who's ever told them about Jesus. And one of the things we do with our Advent Conspiracy money, that if God leads you to give, one of the things that we do with that money is that we are going to give some of that money to an organization that sends missionaries all over the world. that sends people into places where their lives will even be at risk because they are going to go and try to point people to Jesus so that God can draw them to Jesus as their solution in the middle of cultures that worship anything and everything else. And so we have a video to kind of challenge us to think about that this morning, but just realize, as you give to the Advent Conspiracy offering, if that's how God leads you this Christmas, this is one of the places that we'll be supporting, all right? Check it out. Hey, we got a group of people coming out to help me this morning. These are folks from our church. They're people who I think have a strong, maturing faith. And that, you know, I've seen in some of their lives the fact that this idea of margins is something that they're being challenged by. And so instead of me standing out here and just spouting out a bunch of ideas and boring you forever, I'm going to let them bore you this morning, all right? Basically, I asked them to come out this today and help us just talk about ideas of how we can practically apply what we talked about. The fact that, you know, we live our lives out here, you know, no margins in life. And that as we really experience this, the story of Jesus, the incarnation, and even have Christ changing our lives, we feel this call to care for our family, be more relational, to give our presence rather than just stuff, to maybe allow God to use more of our resources for his kingdom and his purposes, and also to be involved in our neighborhood and community. And so they're gonna share ideas. Now, here's the one thing I wanna tell you right up front. Every one of these people, when I asked them to come out here and do this, they got kind of freaked out because they're like, listen, we're not there. We struggle with these things too. We don't have it all figured out. And we know that. I mean, all of us have points of tension in this. But the challenge is to look, first of all, during the holidays, how can we take some steps in our lives to maybe consider these things? And then not just the holidays, but if it really is shaping us beyond the holidays, how do we see God help us find margins in our lives in this area so that we start taking maybe just little steps to you know, live what God has called us to be and to let the joy that he has given us get out and make a difference around us, okay? So they need to grab microphones, start passing them, or just somebody hold on to them, all right? Don't everybody do it at once, though, because that would be... So the first thing I wanted them to share ideas that they've had either in their family or in their own personal lives for ways that they've created margins in their spending and giving, all right? Because we're talking about spending less, giving more, and very specifically around the Christmas season. What, you know, you guys, what have you done in your life around the Christmas season where you've been challenged by the call to maybe see Christ change the way you do your spending habits, whether it's with gifts or other stuff at Christmas, so that maybe you could participate in things that are kingdom-oriented things?
Well, for our family, it's not so much around the Christmas season, but just by nature, growing up, I was kind of I'm a stingy person, probably saved every dime I could find. But where Christ has worked in my life and in our, Donna and I's life when we started following him probably 16 years ago is just the fact that we would give regularly to a church and really view money differently, that it wasn't ours, it's what God gives to us, and we just manage it while we're here on earth. So that's one way we've done it.
All right.
One of the things that Mike and I started doing, I guess really early in our marriage, was we had a certain amount of money for Christmas gifts, and most of the time it was the second job that he was always working, and we knew that it was that amount of money for Christmas. And you know, it's really easy, especially when your kids are young. You just want them to have all these toys and all these things, and it's so easy to overspend. And we made a commitment really early on that, you know, this is Jesus's birthday. And so we are going to buy his birthday present in the gift of a missions offering, or what, you know, whatever we give to the missions offering would be like what we're giving to Jesus. And, you know, it just would not be right to give our kids something that was valued, you know, more money than the gift to Jesus. And so we always knew that whatever we spent on our kids, we were going to give Jesus' birthday gift, and it was going to cost more. So, you know, if it would keep us from spending, okay, I'm not going to buy that $200 gift for my kid because that means my missions offering is going to have to be $225. You know, it's kind of a maybe a little stingy way to do it. But honestly, it kept our spending in check because we knew it was a certain amount of money that we were going to spend at Christmas. And by the way, Jesus's gift is going to be more than anybody else's.
And then what do we do with that gift? How do we do it?
I mean, that gets into more traditional tradition stuff. I'm really, really into traditions for my kids because my parents were into traditions for me. And we have a tradition at our house that it is Jesus' birthday. And so Jesus' birthday present gets opened first. It's a check that's to whatever missions offering that we do, and it's wrapped in an envelope. We keep it at the tree, and that's the very first gift that our kids open.
All right, anybody else about, you know, during Christmas time?
Well, you know, the Christmas store is real close to my heart. When we see all the kids out there that could possibly not have Christmas if it wasn't for our generosity. And we have changed, and what I have found with myself, you know, I no longer go out and buy designer clothes and have to have, you know, I don't have to look like $1 million when I walk out the door, even though I still do. Yeah. But, you know, so we don't dress real fancy, and we, you know, we've got plenty of deer in the freezer to keep us fed, so we don't spend a lot of
only groceries. In Eureka would that be one of the responses from a stage.
And we're able to give more, but what I have found is the least, you know, when I stop spending so much on myself, I start spending more on other people. And that's where I probably need my margins now is what I give away. If I have it, I'll give it. And my whole family is like that. You know, Brian and I had a real God moment last week with something that he brought
cool.
to us.
Cool.
So,
anybody else?
Yeah.
What about during the year? I mean, beyond Christmas, have you found ways for you, your family, you know, to, you know, Christmas reminds us of this, but then, you know, it's very easy. All right, January 1st, now I'm back to my old way of life. What is something? I know, Terry, you have something your family did.
I do. It was probably 20 years ago. The boys were really young, and we decided that we really wanted to adopt a World Vision orphan, but it was $25 a month, and I wasn't working, and we didn't have $25 a month. But we realized we were going to McDonald's a lot, unfortunately. That was their favorite place. But if we would skip that twice a month, that became our, you know, our money for that orphan. So that was a great thing to start with. But we started realizing then that's now just part of our bills. That's part of what we do every month. So we've had an orphan for 20 years, and now it's just part of what we expect to pay every month, and it's part of what we do. And the cool thing is it just becomes part of your life. And then you look for the next way then that you can go on and give. And then the next way that you can go on and give. And it becomes very embedded. And what you want to do is pass that to your kids. That, you know, it's then embedded that Stephen went to Honduras and spent a lot of his own money to do that. And then Ben and Naomi have adopted a compassion child. They have no income. They don't even have a job. But they have a compassion child that they've adopted. And that's when you realize, wow, you know, people are getting this, you know, and seeing that it's part of your life.
Cool. By the way, Compassion World Vision, just so you know, they're two organizations that go into third world countries where, you know, kids are dying of starvation and living in abject poverty. And you're able to sponsor a specific child. And not only do they give their physical needs, but they also put them in a situation where they learn the gospel, they learn about Jesus, that sort of stuff. Two really cool organizations do that. All right, let me move to the next thing, margins with family. Because, you know, Christmas reminds us, all right, we need to be with our families. Then we watch Christmas Vacation. We're all reminded that our families drive us crazy. But in the midst of that, we know that, you know, I mean, as a dad, I know I feel really challenged all the time, but Christmas just heightens that I need to be involved in the lives of my kids, the life of my wife, and even, you know, connecting with parents and stuff, you know, stuff like that. What are some things you and your families have done around the holidays that just make sure that happens, and that not only that, but the real meaning of Christmas is part of that?
The big thing in our family is tradition, and basically tradition, it doesn't have to be anything huge. Tradition is just something that's repeated, either monthly or seasonally, or And hopefully it's a good tradition, you know. Hopefully it's not the tradition of, oh yeah, I remember my mom coming home from shopping every year at Christmas and like having an emotional breakdown. Hopefully it's something that you're, you know,
some
putting
of you
in,
have that tradition in your home, don't you?
Hopefully it's something that you're putting into your kids that's a positive experience. And so really early on, Mike and I decided that, you know, we were really blessed in the very early years of our marriage to move away, like 4 hours away from mom and dad, you know. Honestly, it was a gift for our marriage because we started realizing when Andy was, you know, baby, that we needed to develop traditions just in our, you know, family unit, not extended. I mean, it's great to have traditions with extended family too. Gosh, they're going to hear this and think I don't like them. But no, I mean, it's for young families. You need to know that your family unit is so important and you need to develop those traditions. And it can be something really simple. You know that traditions have worked when your kid is 18 and he's, you know, still begging for the traditions of dressing up in the PJs and driving around, you know, looking at Christmas lights, right, Andy? I tell him all the time that he is our trial run, you know, and that's why we've had kids so long after him, because we're going to see how he turns out and then decide how we're going to change for the other ones. But no, I mean, and now it's a challenge because he has a schedule and you have to schedule those events. Simple things like little baking or, you know, whatever your tradition is, something
simple. So even if we're sitting here with, I mean, there's just a few days left. It's not too late to say, listen, we're going to start something new with our family that helps us remember Jesus and get together as a family and do something relational. Somebody else, so it's something you've done around the holidays that have created some margins for family. Any ideas?
Well, one thing at our house, I always have vacation time I take off, so it coincides with the kids being out of school. I look forward to that. I hope they do. Might be a burden on them. But another thing, especially when they were younger, you know, it's very easy to get caught up in all the consumerism, and we certainly partake in that part of Christmas. But to make sure we sat down at some point and read together one of the gospel accounts of Jesus' birth, like Carla read this morning from Luke, and just implant that when they're younger.
Cool. Anyone else with that? How about throughout the year? How about, you know, taking it beyond the holidays and throughout the year, things that you do to margins so that you're being relational with your family?
Well, I know Brian and I usually have lunch together about once a week, and we talk about a lot of things that we know that are going on in the community. And, you know, he'll tell me about different things with his friends, and that helps me to pray for his friends who've always been a big part of my life and Mike's life. And I think just sometimes your prayers can be a gift to someone because they may not necessarily have someone who's praying for them. And I think that prayers and your time and your effort are a big part of tithing. So, you know, we usually talk a lot and we keep our eyes open and we keep our ears open and we listen and see where there's hurting in the community. Cool. And, you know, we spend time talking to each other about those so that we know what's going on.
All right, good. Anyone else?
As a family, we like to, every night when we eat dinner, we'll pray for Haiti. For those of you that don't know, our family's pretty involved with Haiti and an orphanage down there and a church down there. And so every night at dinner, we'll pray for different aspects of Haiti. We have quote-unquote extended family, the girls' family down in Haiti. When a hurricane or something will hit, we'll always try and get information as to how the family's doing so we know how to pray for them, maybe how to provide for them, because there's been numerous times where the family has just lost everything, you know, and we try to help in that way. And it helps the girls remember where they're from, you know, just the poverty that they came from, and hopefully points them back to Christ and is thankful for where he's brought them. And then we can, you know, talk to the girls and our boys and, you know, how can we help in this situation? You know, more than just praying, though praying is very important. You know, what can we do financially or physically to live as Christ would, to you know, really reach out and try and live the gospel to these people.
Cool. Cool. That's good stuff. All right, last area we're going to talk about is margins when it comes to being part of the mission of God. The fact that if you're a follower of Jesus, that God has changed you, he's given you joy. And I know sometimes that goes up and down, but man, when God draws us back to Jesus, we experience that. And we have this desire to see other people have that. And so maybe around Christmas, maybe it's getting to know neighbors, maybe it's participating in something that's outside of, you know, even worldwide, or what are some things you've done during the holidays to allow God to lead you to do mission, to live for his kingdom and be used by God during the holiday season? Any ideas there?
One of the things we like to do is do a simple Christmas gift for our neighbors. And so one of our traditions, of course, in our family is having a baking day where we just bake all kinds of cookies. And there's certain recipes that we have to, you know, use every year. And we just put together some real inexpensive tins or baskets or even Ziploc bags, whatever, and go do a family walk where we deliver these Christmas gifts to, you know, about the 20 homes that are right there around in our circle, just to tell them Merry Christmas, you know, enjoy some of this. And, of course, we're together as a family as we're doing the walk, and we always include a little invite card to the Christmas Eve celebration, and it's a way for us to connect, you know, to families during the winter time, which most of the time, you know, we're huddled in our house, and we're not seeing neighbors as much as we used to.
All right. Anyone else at Christmas, something you do for neighbors or mission, or what about throughout the year? Any ideas there? Go ahead, Terry.
Well, all I wanted to say is that since we've been at Genesis, it feels like my time is freed up from some of the programs I used to be really involved in when we were in a big church. And so Bob will tell you that I spend one or two nights a week having dinner with different ladies. And I don't spend time just with my church friends. You know, I try to develop relationships with people I wouldn't otherwise. And it's really awesome, you know, to just spend an evening sharing somebody's, you know, dinner with them and somebody's life with them. And those are people not necessarily that will ever even show up at Genesis. That's not really the point. But the point is to really just spend time building a relationship with somebody. And then at some point, they're going to say, well, why do you believe what you do? And why do you, you know, spend time at church or things like that? And you have really just real simple conversations.
Terrific. Hey, give our panel a hand. We appreciate their time up here. You guys go ahead and walk off. Let me just kind of round this out. We're going to sing a couple more songs and explain something we're doing, and we're going to go home. But bottom line is, you know, this was, you know, you think about this stuff, and in theory, you're like, all right, I know I should do that. We just thought it'd be cool and to have some people come out and prime the pump. You may already have your own stuff. There are a lot of you may have had better ideas than we had. That's great. Share them and do them. But joy is at the heart of it. We find Jesus, we experience joy. But then there's the call for our lives to be shaped by what Christ has done. And I don't know about you, but margins, for me, it's a huge, huge issue in all these areas and way more. I mean, you know, just the idea of, you know, reading my Bible on a daily basis, and the answer of why I don't get to it is always, I didn't have time for it. Well, what I'm admitting is I have not created margins in my life to be what God's called me to be. That's our challenge as followers of Jesus. If that's where you're at, we see Jesus and he calls us to let our lives be shaped. And that means we need to start figuring out ways to create margins for these sorts of things in our lives. And I hope you're challenged by that this morning. I'm going to pray. The band's going to come out. We're going to sing a few more songs. All right, Lord, we love you. We praise you. Thank you for our time together this morning. We just bless you for all that you are. In your name I pray. Amen.